Turn to chapter 11, Zechariah. Zechariah is just, there's just too much in it. It's all prophetic stuff. I mean, you can look at it historically. So the notes that are out there on the website are, they are taken from Haley's handbook as far as the historical details, but they're, again, they're conclusions. I'll show you one of their teachings that they slip in when you read history, and it's wrong. It's just flat wrong if you understand Paul's gospel and what Paul preaches and teaches. So, Zechariah chapter 11, verse 15, and the Lord said unto me, is that correct? I haven't got Sue here this morning to update me, so LD, this is your job. And the Lord said unto me, take unto thee yet the instruments of a foolish shepherd. Now historically, we're going to see in Zechariah that the shepherds, the pastors that we would call them today, but the leaders of the flock back in those days did some pretty poor jobs of shepherding. So, but we see in a comparison to the of a foolish shepherd, what can we get out of Zechariah? We can get the Antichrist out of Zechariah, which is that prophetic stuff that people kind of do or don't. And one of the things that Haley's handbook does is it shows either what the scholars say, A, or some scholars say B, some scholars say this. So they leave everybody up to their own thing. But if one understands, again, Paul understands the division, the dispensation between the Gospels and early Acts, and then the tribulation, that time of grace that's in the middle of all there, we have to remember that when they killed Christ and he came back in Acts, he was willing to come back down in Acts. If they'd accepted Peter and Stephen, then they would have gone right into the tribulation. And that's the way the Old Testament talks. They know that because the Old Testament says they're going to kill their Savior. They know that. It says that. In all Isaiah, we'll see some of the things here. So they know that. So anything to do with Christ coming back, as far as the design was, he would come back as the shepherd still, which we know that in John. And he would be coming back in the form of that tribulation thing, where he's going to come back, in the second coming, he's going to come back and do what he has to do, then goes on to the millennium. That's the design of the thing. But what we have to realize, and they don't either want to realize or deal with it, but in the meantime, because of what's going on, there's an Antichrist that shows up instead of the Christ. So what you have to be careful in the Old Testament is, you can be reading some things in the Old Testament that are actually talking about the Antichrist to us today. Does it make sense? I mean, Christ is going to come back. They're going to kill him, so he's going to have to come back. So you get that out of Zechariah. But he's not a foolish shepherd. He's not a foolish shepherd. Look at the 15 again. And the Lord said unto me, take unto thee yet the instruments of a foolish shepherd. For lo, I will raise up a shepherd in the land, which shall not visit those that be cut off, neither shall seek the young one, nor heal that is broken, nor feed that standeth still. But he shall eat the flesh of the fat, and tear their claws in pieces. Woe to the idle shepherd that leaveth the flock. That's not Christ. There's no way is that going to be Christ. The sword shall be upon his arm and upon his right eye. His arm shall be clean dried up, and his right eye shall be utterly darkened. There's where we come up with the fact that Zechariah, what's in Zechariah for us today? The fact that we can identify the Antichrist. Now, whether we know it's Ted Kennedy or Bill Clinton, we can't figure that kind of stuff out yet. But I do think Paul tells us that it will be known just before the rapture who it would be. But anyway, we have to get out of Zechariah not only the stuff about Christ, but about an idle and foolish shepherd, which is the Antichrist. And you don't see that in these commentaries. Well, why would it be in a commentary? Because if everybody's going to read and study a commentary or a Bible study handbook or whatever, that's a good place to make people think that this is the Christ that's coming back. So it's everywhere. I mean, the teaching that Christ is coming back, I mean, everybody believes that if you've got any kind of a Christian flavor whatsoever. Everybody knows that Jesus is coming back, the second coming. You can't deny that in any religion other than the Hindu crowd, that bunch out there. But if you do some studying, you're going to think you're reading about Christ, and you're actually reading about the Antichrist. And the only way you can pin that thing down and expose that is with the King James Bible. So is it really important that a King James Bible be part of the discussion? Very much so. Very much so. In fact, I remember telling that couple that, did you know that the NIV Bible tells the Christians to take the mark? And they said, well, I can't imagine that. Well, I'll show it to you. I'll show it to you and deal with it. So King James Bible, could that possibly be why the devil hates the King James Bible as much as he does? Not only does it have something to do with your salvation as the gospel of your truth, gospel of your salvation, the word of truth, the gospel of your salvation, but it's also the only book in the world that can expose him for what he is, the sneak and the antichrist that he is. Right? That's the only book. So, pretty amazing if you think about it. Now, like I said, we just can't go through Zechariah detail, because again, I believe, like he says in Daniel, it's sealed up till the end anyway, so I'm not going to try to give you my two cents of opinion. What does that matter? But if you want to get the notes off of the internet, and if you want to, there's Haley's Handbook's comments without their teaching, without their preaching. It's just got the facts of history, the facts of Old Testament. But you can't, I mean, there it is. You can twinkle that, but not very much. And the Haley's Handbook Haley's Handbook has a tendency to change some words once in a while. It was talking about it changed, I guess that was in part one. It called them, the Bible word is KJV in parentheses said carpenters, and I forgot what word they used in their title. So they have a tendency to do that, but you just watch for that. And then you realize that they're sneaking some bad teachings in there. So is it good to look at somebody else's modern? No, it's not good. Because within that teaching, you can see that within their outlines and their teaching of history, they throw in their little prophetical stuff. And why do I do that? Because I have no idea about their history. I'm just not a history scholar. But I can pick those prophecies and teachings and preachings and false teachings out of that thing without a shadow of a doubt, because we know Paul. So that's why I use it. It's the only reason I use it at all. I still encourage people to read Haley's Handbook when you're reading through the Old Testament, because some of that stuff in Ezekiel and all these Bibles is just like complicated. Going from one battle to another, who's fighting who, and it's just history. And their paragraphs help you understand that. But you've got to watch for their prophetic and conclusions based on history. They're terrible. And I'll give you one here in a couple of minutes. You'll see it. So how do we do Zechariah, what's left of it, in one day? Well, we'll try it here. If we look at chapter 5 this morning, you'll see an ephah. And it's just a small bushel basket. And the imagery that's in that thing, the vision that is seen, is quite interesting. Their take, which is, I mean, whatever, is sin here is represented by a woman, but it's also represented by a woman that takes care of sin. So what's within the basket? Well, how could a woman take care of sin? Well, Jesus was made without a man. So there's some of that deep stuff that you could see. It has to be what it would be. He'd be the Messiah. Virgin birth. He's not a woman, but it's made by somebody who was not made with a man. So this is the stuff you can get into if you want to. And chapter 6, for example, were four chariots and four spirits. And this is all about God's judgment going around and whacking on the world in those days, not his final judgment, but allowing these nations to beat up his people. It's not God beating up his people, it's just people are beating up on God's people, and he allowed it. Chapter 6, verse 9 to 15. You've got some great stuff in there on this coronation of Joshua, which is a type of Christ. In fact, if you look at chapter 6, verse 12, you see a word there. It's the word the branch. Zechariah 6:12, you see the branch. Okay, if you go to Isaiah chapter 4, chapter 11, Jeremiah chapter 23, Jeremiah chapter 30, Revelation chapter 5, Revelation chapter 22, you see a bunch of stuff on the branch. That's the Messiah. What's another clue in verse 12 that must be the Messiah? It's all capitalized. You know, I mean, that Bible, that King James Bible is exactly the way it's supposed to be. It's done. It's perfected. It is completed. Okay, so you get the branch in there, and then you read about the whole family of David has everything to do with building the temple. Remember, David was told about the temple, given the specs. Solomon built the temple, and then it was destroyed, and then we got this temple being built. But then out of that whole line of David, you got Christ being the temple being built, was all the way through. So you get that out of Zechariah. It's an interesting study if you've got time. I realize people don't have time for that anymore, which is why people are falling for what they're falling today. But hopefully you won't. You get into chapter 7 and 8. It's pretty interesting because it's about fasting. And Zerubbabel and these guys kind of whoop on the people for their fasting. They know that their temple was destroyed. So when the temple was destroyed, they fasted and they prayed for 70 years. And they're starting to build the temple again. And they're still fasting. And Zerubbabel says, "What are you doing? We're rebuilding the place. Let's lay off this fasting thing." And he talks about in chapter 8, he talks about our fast shall now be joyful feasts. What is there to fast about? We're building the temple again. Well, where do we go with that? People wonder, does Paul talk about fasting and praying? He does it one place. But that's also in the early part of his ministry, where he also does baptisms, he also does this other stuff. It's before what? Before the book. So, what do we have? Why are we fasting and whining and praying and doing some secret begging of God to do things when we know that He won't do anything, but He'll tell you what to do when we've got the Bible? So lay off the fast, open the thing, and see what God would have you to do. Same thing as Zerubbabel's telling these people. Listen, we're rebuilding the temple. Get off this fast thing. We're excited. We're building the temple again. We got fasting going on today. Why? God's given us everything we need to know. Where's your excitement and joy? Get into this thing and change your life. So, that's in there. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that wild? Now, Haley's doesn't present that aspect of it. The only way that you can get that is to understand Paul, King James Bible, rightly divided, and you don't play the fasting game. Come on, haven't you fasted and got zero results? I fasted, lost some pounds, felt better physically than I felt in a long time, but my purpose was not accomplished spiritually at all. It just wasn't. Now, maybe it's my fault. I know people can say that because I did slip and had a hamburger on Wednesday. It was a 5-day fast. You see, if somebody's going to say, there's where you blew it. You know, but what about Monday and Tuesday? That was clean. Thursday and Friday was clean. Thursday, I felt terrible. I had a hamburger. Oh, no, God's going to give me. I had kind of a thing. So it's going to sound so irreligious or sacrilegious. Is that the word? Isn't that sacrilegious? To not to fast anything, but folks, we got a Bible. There's no reason to whine and get down and beg God because you say, hey, I told you everything. It's just right now. You open the thing up, and where's your joy that Paul shows us? Okay. So there's that in Zechariah that you can get out of there. You get into chapters 9 through 11 and stuff. I mean, God is putting some heavy-duty hammers on these nations. But it certainly isn't His wrath and His final judgment. It's just not. I was talking to Clarence the other day, and he says he's fighting with his people back in the church because they think that this destruction there in Burma, and then China loses a whole city in one big bump, and they're talking this is God's wrath. And he just says, listen, are Chinese people more sinners than people in San Francisco, Las Vegas? Are they more sinners than you? Kind of a concept. Or is His judgment on our cities? I don't see that city in China having all the billboards and all the stuff that Las Vegas has, all the sin and all the junk that goes on there. Or Atlantic City or New York City or Chicago, or Walla Walla that goes on around in these places. So why is China singled out? Well, they don't follow God. Well, neither do they in Vietnam or India or whatever. How come they're not getting clobbered? This is not time for God's wrath yet. Things are happening. I can't remember where it's at. The Bible says in Psalms that this world is actually getting old. It talks about the earth getting old. You know, when you get old, things start exploding. And things start falling apart. Am I representing God's wrath right now? No, not at all. So it's amazing where God gets blamed for everything anymore these days. No, the earth is falling apart. So he'll have to fix it one of these days. He'll get us off of here when he fixes it. Anyway. So anyway, you can get into Alexander the Great stuff if you want by reading through Alexander, by reading through Zechariah, because there's history that ties in there. But the notes are on the website if you want them. Look at chapter 10. You read through chapter 10, and this is where God talks about this full restoration to his people. Now what's going on in this world when these people, these scholars, think that God is done with his people, with the Jews, his own chosen people? And then you got the Bible believer people that say that, well, yeah, God is done with the Jews. Now we have taken their place. And if you go to 1 and 2 Peter, where it says that we are a peculiar nation, da-da-da-da, that's all about us. It's not about us at all. It just isn't about us. Because he reminds us in where? Romans chapter what? 11. That who do you Gentiles think you are? The only reason you got what you got is because my people that I chose, you know, they fell. But I'm not done to them. Right now I'm going to you, but in the meantime, when I'm done with you, the fullness of Gentile, when I'm done with you, I'm going back to my people. You chose me, and that was your choice, and we're not his chosen people. He is our chosen God, if you want to put it that way. So that's another reason why 1 and 2 Peter, without a shadow of a doubt, is not to us. Now there's some stuff in there for us because they have faith. So we can pull the stuff out of there if we encourage them about having faith, but we can't lose it like he talks about in Peter, and we're not his chosen people. It's just amazing. Again, the only place you get this is King James Bible, rightly divided with Paul. Okay, let me read you something here from the Haley crowd as far as, look at chapter 11. That's the Antichrist kind of chapter in there. The idle shepherd, the foolish shepherd. Let me read you what they kind of slip in here when they're talking about these things. Because there are some quotes in chapter 11 that are backed up in Matthew. Okay, well, listen to this. When we stray from our relationship with God, we withdraw from God's protective care and fall short of our own land of promise and blessing. Then they are delivered into the hands of the worthless shepherd. See? So what they're teaching there is, they hint at the Antichrist there, because it says here, this is thought to refer to the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans shortly after the death of Christ, and the consequent scattering of the Jews, or it may be the personification of the whole list of those who persecute the Jews. Where's that? But anyway, from the Maccabean period to the time of the beast. Little hint of Antichrist there. There are some scholars that recognize that aspect of it. So what Haley puts across here then is, by the way, if you quit and you bag it and you put your Bible up or quit doing your religion or whatever, and you stray from your relationship with God, God will send you over to the Antichrist. He'll put you in the tribulation. I mean, this is what a preacher could preach based on what these notes are at. So there's why I don't want people to have Bibles with notes in them. I've had a couple of people ask, working to get a good Bible, some good study notes. I said, Greg, you don't get a Bible with study notes, because this is the kind of stuff they slip in there. You've got a Bible all by itself, no study notes on the side, no study notes down the middle, no words corrected by the Greek, because they're going to tell you that this is where you lose your relationship. If you quit your relationship with God, God's going to zip you over to the world, and you're going to go to the tribulation. Now, Paul does say that sometimes you have to just give up and say, folks, hey, go to the world, do your thing. But it's the devil that'll beat them up. But if the rapture comes, they're still raptured if we're saved. So we don't lose that relationship with God. If we lost the relationship, the word relationship's not even in here anyway, but the fact that Christ is in us, what would he have to do in order to leave us so we couldn't have that relationship? But to deny himself, Paul tells us about that in Timothy. And Christ will not deny himself, so he will not cut off that fellowship. The word would be fellowship, not relationship, actually. That's why they come up with that stuff. So, but now there's your verse about the Antichrist, the darkening eye thing. Now, have you ever seen a picture of this? Ever seen a picture of this described right there? It's not totally described, but there's the eye thing took place. Where have you ever seen that? The movie The Passion of the Christ. I mean, other than the arm thing, Or did somebody say that there was a place that his arm wasn't doing what it should have been done? But the arm thing might be in there too. I mean, here's this world being set up for the Antichrist. Here's this, what's that?
His arms will be dried
up. Right, and I don't recall seeing that in any picture of the movie, but it seemed like somebody did tell me that. Which arm is it? Does it say? Right arm? That if you watch the movie, that this may not be true at all, but if you watch the movie, he doesn't use his right arm that much. I don't know. I'm not going to watch it to see. The eye is good enough for me to know that. So here's this world today, the coming of the Antichrist being financed by a, who's on there today, Sam? Mark this right here. Okay. Okay. Mark that. Here is the. I'm not recording this thing in video, are we? Okay. Here's this world that Christ came and the Holy Spirit went around the world and did what it did, and it kept getting rejected. Everybody says it's back to where it started. And here's this Christianity fighting with some other little elements out there. And I believe it wouldn't surprise me that the devil's making all these earthquakes and stuff. He can do this, you know. Why wouldn't he do this kind of stuff to tie all these religions in together, being helping God to help everybody, and under the deception of that this is God's wrath? And then here's this country that started off with the Bible, segments of it, and the Constitution was designed based on this Bible, and this country became so strong based on the devil's monies, because it wasn't rightly divided at all in its overall country, and this country has been built up financially by the devil to finance its coming of the Antichrist. Because look what America is doing. It's financing everything that's going on in this world. We're going broke, but it's happening out there. And so when the Antichrist comes, it was all brought in by America's Christianity, which has been wrongly divided from the start, and it just built up an unbounded country. And yet with the deception that is presented, and the Antichrist is ready to come, and we're going to pay for it. And we're the ones that are setting up in the world. Makes total sense to me. I didn't explain it very well, but it makes total sense to me. When you look back at our American history, and you realize rightly dividing, and you realize what they were teaching, they weren't doing that. And by profane and vain babblings, increase in ungodliness. That is the only way you can get that come. That and trusting in riches. Ooh, America doesn't do that. I tell you, that is really, I can see why this book is a hated book by the devil. I really can. And we're just doing our little bit that we can in this day and age to expose this to somebody somewhere. And if it's just us, hey, there's more people here getting this stuff than everywhere else. It's amazing stuff. Okay, then you get into chapters 12 through 14, 9, 10, 11, 12, I think it's among the 12 through 14. Again, it's all about Israel's going to have a fantastic future. I mean, he's coming back. The house of David shall be his God, it says here. There's a person who's going to remove the iniquity of that land in one day. There's only one person that can take care of sin and iniquity in one day, kind of a deal. And it says we'll build the temple of the Lord in chapter 6. It's just amazing stuff, but quite detailed. And all I would say would be to read it slowly. Don't get out of commentary as much, but just read that thing slowly. Here, for example, listen to this, chapter 14. This speaks of the grand consummation of the prophetic dreams, the day of the Lord's return, and the inauguration of his everlasting kingdom. You know what they left out in here? Paul's dispensation of grace. Well, why? Look at Ephesians. So because it's not in there, they think it doesn't exist. And it shouldn't exist, and we're preaching a bunch of baloney. I think you know where I'm going here. Anybody know where I'm going in Ephesians? Ephesians chapter 3? Which in other ages was not made known unto the sons of men as it is now revealed? What is that? That's the mystery of the mystery in verse 3. And what is that mystery? Verse 6, that the Gentiles should be fellow heirs with the Jews. So there's a time that Christ goes to the Gentiles, but he doesn't go to the Gentiles through the Jew. That's the great commission. And that thing fizzles and they kill Christ. And Christ goes on to Paul. That's not recorded in the Old Testament because it was hidden from them. If something's hidden, it's not in the Scriptures. So if anybody says that, you can't even type this thing out of the Old Testament, well, you can't type it out of the Old Testament because it was hidden. Now it's revealed. It's amazing stuff. Now, just for a couple of quick things here, let's look at chapter 3. Just look at some quick things, I guess, here, yeah. Chapter 3, Zechariah. These are things that would be clues that they're talking about the Christ, Jesus Christ, the Messiah, way back in Zechariah. Chapter 3, let's see, verse 8 and 9, see what that thing says here. Hear now, O Joshua the high priest, thou and thy fellows that sit before thee, for they are men wondered at. For, behold, I will bring forth my servant the branch. For behold, the stone that I have laid before Joshua, upon one stone shall be seven eyes. Behold, I will engrave the graving thereof, and the Lord of hosts, I will remove the iniquity of that land in one day. It has to be a hint towards Christ because of the word branch, and it's removing iniquity. But we still know that before that all takes place in this world, it has to have Paul's dispensation in there. But it talks about the Christ being crucified. Well, sure it does. But there's quite a break between those two things. Chapter 6, verse 12. Chapter 6, verse 12. Thus, and speak unto him, saying, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, behold the man whose name is the branch, and he shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of the Lord. Remember some of that story in Matthew about the temple? He says, I can tear that temple down, I can build it up in 3 days, kind of a thing. And he gets arrested for that, or gets not arrested, but he gets hassled for that thing. His own people don't get it, and it's right there in their scriptures. Anyway. Verse 13, and even he shall build the temple of the Lord, and he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne. What's the Antichrist want to do? That's where he wants to sit. He wants to sit higher than God himself is, and that's what he has to do. He has to get the glory, and he wants to sit there, and he sits up there in most people's lives, and the temple that he's built is being worshipped in churches all over this country. Even though Paul says in Acts 17 that you can't worship God like that. But you can worship the devil like that, because if you're not worshiping God, God doesn't get those worships, then who's going to get them? The devil's going to get them. So what's going on in these churches? They're worshiping the devil. Go ahead and tell them that. But that's what they're doing. And the only place you can get that is a rightly divided King James Paul following Bible. And you know what your kids will do sometime. You're getting old enough now to learn to keep your mouth shut a little bit when the relatives are around. But you're driving through town, you know, and the little one says, Grandpa, they worship the devil in those churches. And it happens to be by their church you drive by when you say that, and the grandpa's just come unglued, you know, whatever. But the kid's right. So kids, in those churches, based on the scriptures, those people, whether they know it or not, are worshiping the devil. And he'll accept it. And he'll come back and they'll think that that's the Christ. So the Old Testament is still something to learn about. Not only do you learn about some of the facts, but you see how they've been used to manipulate people into following the Antichrist. That's what I've gotten out of our year and a half study of the Old Testament, is that I see where people have been taught the Old Testament to prepare them for the Antichrist. That's what I've seen. That's my one statement I got out of that thing. And it's quite amazing. Look at chapter 9, verse 9. And listen, you may not see that yet, but this is where I'm going with this stuff, and you can, whatever. If you don't see that, I would honestly, from my heart, say then you've missed a lot of what we're doing here, because that is a great thing to expose, because you've got kids you better take care of that they don't get snookered by the Antichrist, by religion today. And it's pretty hard, because that religion looks pretty fun. Pretty fleshly fun. A lot of people, a lot of buildings, gymnasium, sports emphasis, coffee bar emphasis. It's just all there. Entertainment, programs, videos, Bible studies, characters, vegetables that come alive, and queer bears and all that kind of stuff. Nobody has any judgment towards anybody's actions or activities. The music is just downright exciting and fleshy, and everybody has a good time, joyful time. They love and care for each other better than anybody else. Your kid's not going to want to go there? Come on, what do you got to offer instead? Now we've got a church, we can kind of pick at each other because we know that they're trying to do right, but they're not. We've got people that do or don't read their Bible. We've got people aren't getting along, and we got a Bible that the pastor gets up and gets grumpy all the time, and all this kind of stuff. You kids and I talk about shooting guns and everything. You think you kids going to want to go here? You better enjoy what you have, and they better see that what you get here is enjoyable and learnable, because otherwise they're not going to want this. And you can tell them this is what they want all their life, but you know where that goes. Want to tell them, well, here's where you ought to go, you know. Well, you know where that goes in these days. Anyway, chapter 9, verse 9. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, thy king cometh unto thee. He is just and having salvation, lowly and riding upon an ass and upon a colt, the foal of an ass. There you are, Matthew. There you are. That's good. Chapter 11, verse 12. Chapter 11, verse 12. I said unto them, if ye think good, give me my price, and if not, forbear. So they weighed for my price 30 pieces of silver. There's a clue. Look at chapter 12, verse 8. In that day shall the Lord defend the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and he that is feeble among them at the day shall be as David, and the house of David shall be as God. What is that? That's the deity of Christ. I'm going to look that up later in an NIV. I wonder what they do there. There's all these modern Bibles take out the deity. I wonder if they caught that one. Chapter 12, verse 10. And I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplications, and they shall look upon me whom they have pierced. And they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. Look at 13, verse 7. Awake, O sword, against my shepherd and against the man that is my fellow, saith the Lord of hosts. Smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. Now, why are we going to this one? That's Antichrist stuff there. Unless they're talking about his crucifixion, smiting the shepherd, which is fine, which is okay. But still, remember that the Antichrist will be smitten as well. So you just have to be careful of where these folks go with what they have for their teachings in these books.